You want to get your backyard summer ready, but you don't want to break the bank? Wayfair gets it. Planning on dining al fresco or relaxing poolside? Wayfair has everything you need to prep your space. Shop now and save up to 70% off during Wayfair's 4th of July clearance. Score huge deals on outdoor furniture, area rugs, and more. We're talking thousands of products for every style and budget. Plus, surprise flash deals July 6th. Don't wait. Shop Wayfair's 4th of July clearance now through July 6th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
Picks, Knicks, Sticks, Picks, a podcast about Rob's movies with your hosts, Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka. And now, ladies and gentlemen, let the show begin.
It's Picks, Knicks, Sticks, Picks.
I hate when you show up in costume.
I hate when you don't. It wouldn't kill you to get a pair of glasses.
All right. We'll see. Eventually, there'll be a movie, and I'll show up in costume like you do.
Okay, Hicks, Sticks, Knicks, Picks, a service of the Mike O'Mara Show with Rob Spiewak and Josh Sroka. I'm the Rob that they talk about in the title that says, these are my movies, and this is truly one of my movies. This was, and I have here the actual VHS copy I bought in high school, and I would, every time I had friends over, and back then I had friends, Josh, I'd try to talk them into watching it, and invariably, they were annoyed, but they ended up enjoying it. Oh, and as far as the glasses, they are official Elvis glasses from Graceland. Not the cheap ones you buy at Party City. These actually have a TCB on the the arm of the glasses?
That would be the arm of the glasses, yes.
Yeah, so they've got, but they are not my medication. So from Elvis to old man, here we go. This week's movie is from 1964, the Elvis Presley classic, Viva Las Vegas, starring Elvis Presley, Anne Margaret, William Demarest. Do you know who William Demarest is?
Yeah, he's the guy in this movie.
Yeah, he's Mr. Martin, but he also played Uncle Charlie on My Three Sons, and he goes back. His film career goes back to the 30s. Okay, well, he's been around a while.
I know who Elvis is.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's good when you know the most recognized person in the last 100 years.
Rob, this is my first time experiencing Elvis.
Besides Elvis movie at all?
Besides hearing his music.
Which I'm sure you don't listen to a lot.
Nope, but seeing him perform or a movie, first time.
Okay. Well, we'll get you one. We'll put in a toe this time, but we'll get you there. Cesar De Nova plays the Count. Now, have you ever seen Animal House?
I have.
Okay, he plays the mayor of the town in Animal House. The guy that is opposite Dean Wormer. He says, "I don't want no drunken riots in my town." And then Nikki Blair as Shorty Farnsworth and Jack Carter. He plays the comedian that hosts the talent show at the end, spoiler alert, who is widely, he recently passed, but widely regarded as one of the most unpleasant men in show business. He was pretty much hated. It was directed by George Sidney. I don't know why this surprises me. The screenplay is by a lady, Sally Benson, who also wrote some great classic films. She wrote Meet Me in St. Louis. She did this one. This will not surprise you. She wrote the sound to the script of Viva Las Vegas in 11 days. It's an MGM movie, 1 hour and 25 minutes long. Now, before we start, I'm going to tell you something that I feel will surprise you. I love Elvis. That won't surprise you. But of all of his songs, Viva Las Vegas is one of my least favorites.
But it's one of the most recognizable.
It is. It's iconic. But if you think about it, it's a love song to a city. So it's fairly shallow.
Yeah.
It's easy to grab onto because it's about Las Vegas. If you ever listen to the stereo mix of it, it's upsettingly bad. It was such a poorly made record. The other one I don't like very much is Love Me Tender. But other than that, I think this is one of the strongest soundtracks he ever came out with. But we'll talk about that later.
Came first? The song chicken. Or the movie?
Oh, the song was written for the movie.
Okay.
Okay, so I mean, there was
a marketing.
Yeah, of course. I mean, what they would do is they would... They used to ask Elvis, especially when he got frustrated with his movies, they say, "What's the new movie about?" And he'd say, "Different city, new girl, 12 songs, I fight a guy, and then I get the girl." That's every Elvis movie. So this one only has 11 songs in it. One was cut. But yeah, it's a pretty strong soundtrack all the way through. So let us now examine the 1964 classic, Viva Las Vegas. Now, one thing I like is that it opens with the bongo music over the MGM logo and Leo the Lion. And it opens with the song Viva Las Vegas. Now, it is actually a gorgeous movie. The color, the widescreen, and as someone who has been, we've twice been to Vegas together, right?
Once.
Once. We, downtown Grand, right? And yes. You know the way the city looks, and this is all in Old Town Vegas. The captures of the Strip at this era are beautiful.
Yeah,
I mean,
and it's
really, really good looking in this montage.
Right, and you go down, the scene in the casino is awesome because you hear the slot machines, but it's not the constant video game sound that you hear today.
No, it's like bells and dropping coins. Yeah, I love
it. Which then makes it so much more of a big deal when someone wins.
Exactly. This is can be compared to the original Ocean's 11 as not just a fine film on its own right, but a capture of an era in Vegas that is truly, truly gone. There was nothing like The Wynn or the Excalibur or Circus Circus. It was just lines and lines of hotels and casinos all on the Strip. That's one of my favorite aspects of the film is sort of the capture and the background. A lot of Elvis movies were just called travel logs, and I can only look at a travel log of Hawaii so many times, but this is a travel log of Las Vegas, and I love it. You see so many of the great hotels like the Hotel Fremont, the Horseshoe, Wilbur Clark's Desert Inn, the Pioneer Club, and of course, a place that I'm quite familiar with, the Golden Nugget. But if you look at where the Golden Nugget is in the opening sequence, you realize you're only about 1,000 yards from the Downtown Grand.
Yeah, but the Downtown Grand wasn't there then.
No, and it's not really much to look at anyway. But this is our neighborhood, Josh.
And so I think it's going away, right? Didn't they file bankruptcy this year anyway?
Yeah, because we didn't come this year.
Yeah.
What they needed was all of our money and the dollar hot dogs in the casino. That was the difference, the dollar hot dogs and the dollar tall boys. We see, as the music fades, race car driver / singer. And remember, whenever you're talking about an Elvis movie, it's always, his occupation is always what he does in the movie / singer, because you know he's going to sing. So like in Jailhouse Rock, ex-convict / singer.
They did a better job here with the singing of it being like a reason to sing, not
they wove
a
it into the plot.
Style.
Exactly. Lucky Jackson arrives in Las Vegas towing his race car. It looks like something out of the Jetsons. They say, "Oh, he built it himself." It that modern looking car kind of comes off looking a little dated. He has no engine for the car, and I know you want to know why I chose it for this time of year. It's technically a July 4th movie, Josh, because the Las Vegas Grand Prix is July 4th.
All right.
See?
Yeah, okay.
See, all right. It ain't exactly Yankee Doodle Dandy, but there's does have a connection.
Yeah, but you picked it way earlier than July 4th, because you picked this movie 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, but this podcast will have a tale, as they
okay,
say.
Got it.
The only problem is he's going to enter this Las Vegas Grand Prix. The only problem is he doesn't have the motor. Got a beautiful car, no engine. So he walks into the casino. It's the Flamingo. He has impossibly black hair. It does not move. It's a color not found in nature. He looks around and has an amazing run at the craps table and wins enough money to buy the engine, which is in Los Angeles, and is being looked over by his assistant and mechanic, Shorty Farnsworth. So he managed to raise the money, but he's still on a shoestring budget, and he's still in Vegas, and he has his car, but no engine. So he stores his car at a garage, and while he's at the garage, he meets his main competitor. This is so obvious. The Italian racing count, Milo Mancini. And that is the guy that is played by Cesar DeNova, who you know from Animal House. The count offers Lucky to, quote unquote, drive for him, which doesn't mean he's going to drive his car. It means he's going to block and drive defensively to make sure the count can win the Las Vegas Grand Prix. Elvis says, one thing, I'm going to win this race, and I don't work for anybody, and I don't come second to anybody. So he turns it down, which miffs the count a little bit. So they're talking, and at that point, they're actually under the car on one of those back rolling things. Is there a name for those? You know, when you lay on your back and roll under
I believe
a car?
It's a creeper.
Is it really?
I believe so. I don't know why I just pulled that.
Well, I love the fact that it's a creeper right as Anne Margaret walks in, and you don't even see her face. They just show her legs. And she is hyper-sexualized in this movie for 1964. They really are selling the fact that she is Anne Margaret. And they both meet Rusty, and she says she has a whistle in her car. She is, by the way, I can say this because I watched the original trailer.
No, it's okay. You don't have to say it.
The original trailer for Viva Las Vegas, do you know what the last words on the screen were? It's a knockout.
Yeah, so okay, I will. Okay, it's a knockout.
Okay,
not
so
she.
Well, she was and is a knockout. So Lucky starts to flirt with her and offers to fix her car. But when his back is turned, the count lets Rusty slip away without getting her name or number. Stupid, because they're both interested in her. So she's so beautiful, they decide she's got to be a showgirl. This is what a small environment Las Vegas must have been 60 years ago. Is it 60? Yeah, 60 years ago.
Or how small-minded these two guys are.
There's that as well. So Elmo and Lucky, which, by the way, I'd listen to that morning show, wouldn't you? Elmo and Lucky, or Lucky and
Elmo.
The Count. Yeah. They go and visit all the shows at the Strip. They go to the Sands, the Thunderbird, the Stardust, the Flamingo, the Tropicana. And they end up at a mysterious and made-up club called Swingers, which is hosting a Sons of the Lone Star State festival, convention. It's all crazy people from Texas. And they won't start the show to see if they have her as a showgirl because these Texans are going crazy. So in order to calm the crowd, Lucky sings a Texas medley. The Yellow Rose of Texas and the Eyes of Texas Are Upon You. Now, I always thought this was sort of a weirdly chosen song, almost like a public domain song for Elvis to do the Yellow Rose of Texas. But it fits the, as you said, it sort of fits the plot, right?
He probably had no inspiration to write a Texas song.
I guess you're right.
Well, the Yellow Rose of Texas is the only girl I love.
That's enough. But Elvis, also, keep in mind, Elvis didn't write any songs ever. So.
Yeah, but also if the storyline plot, and I can't believe I'm standing up for the storyline.
Oh, well,
but
you are an ambassador for the movie, so it's okay.
Right, but if the plot is to calm down these people from Texas, you got to do a song they know.
You're right, and you know what? It's perfect. And I also sort of put a pin in this for now. This nightclub called Swingers is a neat, neat set. The entire dance floor is a roulette wheel. And it's actually, it looks like a pretty expensive set. I think this might have been Elvis's last big budget A picture, because the sets and everything do look good. They clear the room. They don't find Rusty there. So the next day they're back at the Flamingo commiserating when the Count and Elvis, I'm sorry, I'm going to call him Elvis sometimes. I just can't help it. The Count and Lucky, they spot Rusty. She's the pool manager at the hotel. Of course she is. And she's wearing a bathing suit because, again, they want to hypersexualize her. They're not going to make her like like someone in management that wears a smart outfit. She's going to be in a bathing suit.
That's how I like my managers, in uniform.
That's right. Well, that's how I used to like all the management at radio stations, too, in a smart outfit or a bathing suit. So Elvis grabs a guitar, which just happens to be there, and tries to woo her by singing a great duet called The Lady Loves Me, But She Doesn't Know It Yet.
The gentleman is an
evil. Oh, this is the second outfit she's in.
Yes. Pretty much a swimsuit also.
Yeah. And for this era, Elvis looks about his best.
I'd rather dine with a Frankenstein in a moonlight tete-a-tete.
The lady loves me, but she doesn't know it yet.
And we're going to see here a theme that we will revisit later, is that Elvis is actually singing a duet with his leading lady, which almost never happened. But Anne Margaret was such a star, they let her share the screen with him. So now they've climbed up to the high dive at the swimming pool.
She loves me.
Would you like to make a bet?
And no one sees this coming, right?
Well, everyone but Elvis.
Of course, everyone but Elvis. Lucky.
Lucky.
The gentleman's all wet. Because he fell into the pool. Now, what happened is his bankroll that he won at the craps table fell out of his pocket into the pool. And this is one of the plot points that troubles me the most. I know a kid finds it, and ultimately the money gets sucked into, like, the pool's intake.
Right.
But The kid doesn't realize it's money. The kid is like 5 or 6, and he's playing with the rubber band and gets rid of the money. Don't you think even a 5 or 6-year-old kid would realize he's holding about $10,000?
Oh, yes. Yeah, okay. It's a very weak, like, there's better ways that he could have lost the money.
Exactly. But, I mean, it's an Elvis movie. Let's not split dyed back hairs. So he has no money. He's broke again. And now Lucky and Shorty have to work as servers at the hotel to pay off their debt. The count keeps hitting on Rusty, but Lucky gets a date with Rusty, and she agrees to meet him at UNLV the next day. Nice location shot of the University of Las Vegas. And Rusty does a dance rehearsal when he gets there, and it is about as Anne Margaret-y as you can get. And if you've ever seen Kristen Wiig on Saturday Night Live do her impression of Anne Margaret doing something, it's based largely on this. Very hip at the time. And it doesn't, the dancing itself doesn't age very well, but she is truly a knockout. And you see the dancer in purple?
Yeah.
That's a young Mike O'Mara.
Oh, also a knockout.
Also a knockout. So Elvis, Lucky comes to UNLV and sees her dance, and he is smitten. And before the date, she says, well, I told everyone here, you have to do something, because I told him you were coming. And Elvis sings technically a duet. It's called Come On Everybody. I think this is the best number in the movie. Great song,
too. Come on, everybody, take a real deep breath and repeat after me.
And note how the director gets her ass in the shot.
Right.
I love my baby.
And he's singing because he wouldn't dance. But now he's dancing.
Right. And you know what? There's just a trace.
And I was born to rock.
There's just a trace of 1950s Elvis still in there. He's still moving his hips. He's still moving his legs. It's good to see all this go down. She is obviously very impressed with him. And so the date continues, and it is the longest one-day date ever. Could you believe the amount of stuff they got packed into one date?
Yeah, it's well, I guess they met 9 a.m. or whatever. So
well, they would have to meet early because they went skeet shooting, they rode mini bikes, they did for some reason old Western town cosplay.
Yes.
They took a helicopter ride above the Hoover Dam. They did some rear projection water skiing.
All with no money.
That's right. And Rusty outdoes him at everything. And it seems to me that they are falling in love. So back to Rusty's home, which they call an apartment, but to me it looks like a massive houseboat with 1960s lighting. I don't know if it's a boat or an apartment. They meet her dad, William Demarest, who we talked about earlier. And he actually, Mr. Martin is the only name he's given. He takes a shine to Lucky. Now, when I bought this movie on Blu-ray on Amazon, you know, I don't think Amazon does it much anymore, but they used to sort of track your interests in a more obvious manner. They didn't just like, you know, hide it in your Facebook feed. They would send you an email.
Well,
and
yeah.
After I bought Viva Las Vegas, they sent me an email that said, we hope you're enjoying Viva Las Vegas. Here are some other William Demarest movies you might like.
Yeah, see, now they just listen to everything going on in your home. So what movies you're interested in is very little.
But I love the fact that they thought the reason I bought this movie was not Elvis Presley, not even Anne Margaret, just William Demarest.
I think he's very good in this movie, and I like
he's
that
great.
Character.
Well, you know what? The whole cast is actually pretty good. Shorty is kind of a weak character, but everyone in the movie is a star, and I like that. So Rusty gets ready for the date. There's going to be an evening date. The date continues, and Lucky sings the prettiest song in the movie, Today, Tomorrow, and Forever, which, amazing to me, was never released as a single. I think it's one of his prettiest songs that he ever did. And it's a nice, understated love song. Very, very nice. And they're back off to a club. And although it's not Swingers, did you notice it's the same set as where the Texans were? Roulette wheel.
I thought it was the same place.
It is. I don't know if it is or not, but they're obviously reusing that set. But they hear they were never a charting band, and they were more of a like a destination band in Las Vegas. They did a lot of lounge work. They were called the Jubilee Four, and they sing a song called The Climb. Elvis loved Las Vegas, so he knew of the Jubilee Four. He got them in the movie. And if you listen to the outtakes, one of the backup singers on that song they sing is Elvis Presley. He was so excited to have them in the movie that he actually sang backup for them, which I think is pretty cool. And then they segue into another high-energy dance number. This was released as a single with moderate success, What I Say, which is a Ray Charles cover. And I'm not even going to say knockout here, but I'm going to say sexual. There is a sequence where they do close-ups of Elvis and Margaret back to... I'll let you see it, and I'll tell me what you think. Oh, and also, these wacky backup dancers are out of their mind. Here we go. Watch this. When you have close-ups like that of them moaning at each other, in 1964, you might as well be showing them banging. That is a very sexualized image, I think. Don't you think so?
Yeah,
and tasteful, but I mean, it is, you get to see close-ups of two very beautiful people. And I always thought that that was not as much as like, it's not going over the top, but I think it's very, very smart direction. So they do this song. It's great. It's sexy. There's upbeat dancing. There's flipping and everything. If you watch closely, the girl that is dressed in the white shirt and black skirt is Terry Garr, who you would know later on in, as a great Letterman guest, but Mr. Mom and Young Frankenstein. What else was she in? Oh, and of course, Tootsie. I think she got an Oscar nod in Tootsie. So this is one of her first things. And also, do you remember the song, Oh, Mickey, You're So Fine? You're So Fine,
I
You Blow My
that
Mind?
Song.
Yep. Tony Basil is one of the dancers in this movie. So there's, you know, there's stars sprinkled about. However, after this whirlwind 28-hour date, Rusty finds out from the Count that racing is really quite dangerous and that Cal Howard was once the greatest racer who got killed in an accident during a race. So Rusty turns against racing, and she hates the danger. She's also frustrated with Lucky's attitude towards money. He's very laissez-faire about money. Whatever he wins, he can lose. Whatever he loses, he can win back. She's a hard worker. She wants to settle down. She wants to have a little white house with a tree in the yard. And she knows deep down Lucky can't change. And they have their first sort of hiccup in the relationship. So she storms out, comes home frustrated and angry until there's a knock at the door. And her father, Mr. Martin, takes delivery of a tree. And I think this is probably your favorite quote in the movie because you actually quoted it to me.
This is the part in the movie where I was like, this is ridiculous. Because she is excited over a tree. Daddy, I got a tree.
I got a tree. And well, they do refer back to the tree in a couple scenes. And it's a pretty funny,
and I know
pretty
what,
funny
and,
device.
And the if you're dating someone, the tree was a great move.
True.
Based on your conversation. Her excitement to tell her daddy that she got a tree just threw me off while I was watching it.
Well, at least she's not calling her dad uncle like they did in Miracle on 34th Street. So meanwhile, the Count, sensing that Lucky has no way to pay off his debt, offers to pay it off for him. And Lucky is angry because he's going to win. This is the first time we hear about it. The Hotel Employee Talent Show. Rusty hates his bravado and just assuming he's going to win because she's competing too. So she agrees to get back at Elvis. She's going to have dinner with the Count, the Count Mancini. And they arrange for this romantic dinner for two in his hotel. And Elvis, go ahead.
Yeah, but it's not because of the talent show. It's because he says that he won't stop racing.
Well, yeah, but she's pissed that he just assumes that he's going to win the talent show, too. Yeah. I mean, everything is banging against him right now.
A lot of stretches for one date.
I guess you're right. Yeah,
a lot
so
of
far, I guess
your life
we've,
together.
It's only been like 3 days in the movie, maybe only two. A lot of stuff. This is a very busy life Elvis leads. So during the dinner, Elvis arranges to be the maitre d' or the server or the room service guy, and he absolutely ruins everything. He serves potato chips. He blows out the candles saying they smell funny. He showers them with champagne and ruins the date in a tremendous way. And I think at this point, Rusty is starting to enjoy what he did, and they smile at each other. The relationship is not over yet.
I don't understand why the Count allows it to continue.
That's true. Well, like, he tries to shut it down, but he can't. So he finally kicks Elvis out, and then you hear from the balcony, I suppose, beautiful music from his homeland of Italy and the song Santa Lucia.
sul mare luccica.
Which, of course, is Elvis. We don't know it yet because it segues into a rocker called If You Think I Don't Need You, which is not exactly a love song.
If you think I don't need you, take a look at my eyes.
So the date is officially ruined, and they're broken up, and Rusty is a free agent, although we kind of leave it with her liking Lucky Jackson. They go to the talent show. Ann Margaret sings a song called Appreciation, which is amazing because we've seen all these acts in Las Vegas on tiny little stages. Like when we're doing the tour looking for her as a showgirl, the stages are tiny. Now she's on something with like a 75-foot proscenium
and lighting.
It is a huge talent show.
And you know, she get backup dancers for a talent show.
That's right. And so she sings the song Appreciation. It recalls the song Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend. That's sort of, I think, their inspiration. She has backup dancers, an amazing dance routine. And the next act is Lucky singing Viva Las Vegas again. Obviously, they wanted this to be a hit. This is the most energetic performance that you see from Elvis in the movie. Two things to note here. He's moving around so much, his hair almost moves. And also that they shot this in one long take, and this is the only time in Elvis's 33 movies that he ever sang one song, one take, without a cut. This is like seeing a real performance.
A real loud performance. Right, like, said he's gonna set my soul, gonna set my soul on fire. Got a whole lot of money that's ready to burn, so get those stakes up higher.
And I will say this, even though I still don't like the song, it's made better when you see Elvis sing it because he's performing it. But still, it's the same song again. It turns out he ties with Rusty for the talent show. And so they flip a coin. Jack Carter is the host. Lucky wins. I don't know why they all thought they were going to get money, because first prize was not money. It was a honeymoon to Las Vegas. Kind of cheap, I think.
Well, I didn't get it because it's a talent show for people who work in Vegas, and you're giving them a trip.
Maybe it's an in joke. It's an in joke because it's such a bad prize that they're being allowed to travel to someplace they already are. I don't know, but it's a great plot device because he doesn't have the money, and Rusty wins a pool table, which is beautiful.
Right.
So they go 1-2. It was very, very close. So a very sad Elvis walks away. He's got no money. He's got no car. He's got no woman. There you are. He still needs he needs money to buy the motor. He is alone and broke. And in voiceover, as he's walking, you know where he walks to? He walks back to the nightclub with the roulette wheel. And that's where he's hanging out. Third use of the set, and sings the song, I Need Somebody to Lean On, which is actually quite pretty. This is the third use of the set at Swingers. This song has got like a bluesy feel with a taste of country. Again, never pulled as a single.
To lean on.
And it's great. He sings this in voiceover, and then in the second part, he actually performs it in the movie. But again, you brought up a great point, is that the fact that it starts out as in his mind doesn't make it as awkward as another musical moment in other movies, right, when someone just might bust out singing.
No, they do a much better job transitioning the performances.
And later on in Elvis movies, that also would not be the case. So he's feeling bad for his partner. Shorty has an idea. He shows up the next day. He has the motor, but they only have... Here's where the excitement comes, Josh. They only have 12 hours to install the motor. And Mr. Martin shows up. He helps Rusty. He helps them install. Rusty is mad that her dad is helping out. She's angry enough to sing a song called My Rival, in which she writes in ketchup on bread. She's very, very frustrated. And she bitches while making a huge picnic and then brings it to the garage with enough food and coffee for everyone, although she says it's just for her dad. Obviously, she's feeding the entire crew because she still loves Lucky. She helps with the install. She's horrible. A lot of stupid sight gags. Everything gets unplugged. People get squirted oil in their face.
Yeah,
yada,
it was
yada,
a
yada.
Three Stooges routine.
It was. And, you know, not badly done, but just maybe a little out of place. So the race gears up to begin, and the car, baby blue number 7, that's Elvis's car, is ready to go. There's more great vintage Vegas location shots. I love that the race started at midnight, so they got to show the city at night. And then you never think about this. The race actually goes over Hoover Dam, using Hoover Dam as a road, which was very, very cool. And of course, they're able to borrow the helicopter again so they can follow the race from above, which to me is only a clever device to let them know if you have an aerial shot. It's because there's a helicopter in the movie. So they made the helicopter a character.
Well, they've got camera crews and telephone. They let everyone know how they'll be.
Of course. Yeah. So there are thrilling crashes and near misses. And amazingly, this was probably the biggest surprise in the film to me. Lucky Jackson wins the Las Vegas Grand Prix. And at that point, Shorty reveals that Mr. Martin was the guy who funded the engine. But Rusty must be okay with it because they get married. Anne Margaret and Elvis, Rusty and Lucky get married. And
5 days
Lucky
after
sings.
Meeting.
That's right. And again, Lucky sings Viva Las Vegas 3 times in an 87-minute movie.
What you want, it's marketing, branding. It's
I think it's the most overuse of a theme song until that thing you do. The Tom Hanks movie about the Wonders.
Oh, I do
like
that.
They played that
movie.
Song. I love it.
But you're right.
They played
that
song so many times in the movie. So
that's true.
You
but
really
same branding. It's nailed
yeah, you're
into
right.
your head just like this
you're
one
right.
is.
So he performs it again, and Finn. Now, this was, many people say it was Elvis's greatest movie because Anne Margaret was one of the few co-stars that could match Elvis's screen presence, creating a spark that still jumps off the screen more than 60 years later. Now, before we get into your thoughts on the film, and before we take a short break, I want you to, if you would, comment on the chemistry on screen between Elvis and Anne Margaret.
They're great. Outside of the music, they're the best part of the movie.
Yeah,
and Elvis is. I expected Elvis to be a really bad actor, and he is fine in this.
Yeah.
And they play off each other so well that it just works for the entire 90 minutes.
I agree. All right, so let's take a short break, and we'll get into some of the details. Even I have a few problems with the movie. And then we'll get our ratings and we'll do all that. This is Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks, and we will be back right after this. Back, part 2 of Viva Las Vegas. Never made a sequel to it, by the way. Viva Las Vegas on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks with Rob Spiewak and Josh Sroka. And the movie, I would describe... Just let me give you this to riff upon.
Okay.
I would describe this as a perfect, not even a popcorn flick. This is a cotton candy movie. There is so little drama, even in the car race where people are dying. There's so little drama in the thing. You don't have any trouble with any characters you care about. It's just a lighthearted story told lightheartedly with great music. Do you think the movie lacks any sort of serious conflict that could make it better?
Oh. There's many ways to make it a better movie, but this was never set out to be like this amazing movie.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is for Elvis fans to sell more Elvis stuff. Mm-hmm. And they got a little lucky with Anne Margaret that she fits so well. It reminds me of modern movies. When I went a couple weeks ago and saw The Breadwinner in theaters, the Nate Bargatze movie.
Yes.
That's not a great movie. It's
well,
weak.
He is a lot. He's a lot like
everywhere.
Anne Margaret, though, isn't he?
Well. But it's the same thing where the storyline is the weakest thing you could put together in order to showcase Nate Bargatze's jokes.
Yeah,
this is the
tangential,
thinnest storyline to show off Elvis. And, I mean, it works because the other thing is, for someone who has never seen this movie, most of the songs I've heard before.
Yeah,
because they're Elvis, and they then built it off this movie into this.
They're in our psyche
as a
people. It is... I think one of the reasons it works so well is the third great. I mean, Elvis is obviously the character to watch. Anne Margaret is perfect on screen. I think the third best character in the movie is the city. It's so well done. I can compare it to The first Ghostbusters, we've never talked about it on this show, but
showcases New York.
Yeah, New York is a character in the first Ghostbusters, as Las Vegas is here.
It is, yes.
Also, I've said for a long time that there are very few things that are as exciting as when Elvis did a project that he really cared about. Now, if you go like into the late 60s when he's doing songs that he didn't care about and movies he didn't care about, it could almost be cringeworthy. When in the late 60s and 1970, when he started back on stage in Las Vegas and he was selling records that he loved again, like Suspicious Minds and Don't Cry Daddy and all these Rubberneckin' was one he loved as well that enjoyed success later. When he tried, he was, even when he didn't try, it was pretty good, but when he really tried, he was amazing. And you see him really working in this movie, and I think, and I have some facts to back it, is because he didn't want to not shine next to Anne Margaret. He wanted to keep up with her, and that's tough. And so you see him really, to a point that he... They were, Colonel Tom Parker, his crooked and evil manager, actually counted screen time down to the second that they were in the movie to make sure Elvis had at least as much or more screen time than Anne Margaret because it was in the contract. So, I mean, obviously this was something that was definitely on his mind. Everyone knows this now that Anne Margaret and Elvis were dating, which is a very polite way to say it, during pre-production and during the movie. It was in all of the the papers, Josh.
I mean, they were preparing for their roles.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's prep.
It went so far as the fact, though, that they had the equivalent of TMZ back then, whatever it was, the Hollywood Reporter or Variety. They were able to sneak some pictures of the final scene at the wedding chapel. And they released them saying that Elvis and Margaret got married in real life. So, I mean, it was a big deal. Now, everyone was okay with this except for one person, a young lady back in Memphis named Priscilla Presley.
Okay. I could see that being an issue.
She was wildly upset because although, you know, he'd made a ton of movies with a lot of good-looking women, this was the first time that the relationship was the story. Now, something about Priscilla that you might want to keep in mind. She was born in 1945, which means she was 18 or 19 when this movie came out. However, she met Elvis when she was 14. And when she was 16, Elvis moved her away from her family to live at Graceland, saying that her dad would take care of it and make sure everything was okay. They would eventually marry in 1967, but that does not really account for the 5 years that they were living together and fooling her family. So she had her eye on the prize of getting married to Elvis Presley. And when she saw this, it really, really upset her and caused one of the first big rifts in their relationship, which I think is understandable.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's all right. I think you can be mad if you're being cheated on.
Yeah,
I think that works.
You're allowed. This was the biggest grossing movie for Elvis Presley. It topped Blue Hawaii by over $450,000, which was a lot of money back then. And this is amazing. In 1964, if you say that year to any music historian, they'll say that's the year of Beatlemania. That's when the Beatles had, like, at times, like, 10 of the top 15 records in the world were Beatles records. And they also that year released a great movie that we may someday look at called A Hard Day's Night. But this outgrossed A Hard Day's Night by $3 million. So even though Beatlemania was crazy and at the top of its game, Elvis still had a toehold in Hollywood. And I think Anne Margaret was a lot of that. Do you think that if he had done another movie with Anne Margaret, could he have prolonged his career? Because after this, the movies are down, 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 down.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think those two could have made 10 movies together. Like you see some, like how in the 90s, it seemed like it was Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan in every movie together. These two could have done the same thing.
Almost every decade has a hot Hollywood couple that could do it.
Right.
I'm not sure Priscilla would be into it, but they have such a magic on screen together. Like normal throwaway dialogue, there are like long pauses where they're just like staring at each other. If it wasn't so obvious that they were I don't even want to call it love, but they were into each other. It would be creepy because there is that sort of electricity coming off the screen with them.
Yeah, it's like Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson.
Yeah, but this was real.
Right, that was just fake to get us to go see the movie.
Exactly. Some theaters actually put Anne Margaret's name above Elvis on the marquee.
Well, it's because you're selling a movie, so that makes sense.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
You put the movie star there,
and it was troublesome. And the Colonel really had a problem with it. The one person who didn't have a problem with it was Elvis. He was a big fan, and even though they didn't really see each other romantically after this movie, the set broke and everything, he would still send her flowers every opening night when she opened a show in Vegas. She was, I believe, the first celebrity to fly to Memphis when Elvis died. They loved each other till the very end. And I think that's really, really, I think you can see that in this movie. I know one reason you loved it is it's the shortest movie of Elvis's career
and
at 85 minutes.
It is short. It's also fast paced.
It is.
It's there's no dragging scenes. It's bang, bang, bang.
Could you believe that they got 11 songs into that movie? And one they did three times.
I mean, it worked. They slammed them in there, but it worked.
It did. A lot of them are edited down if you buy the soundtrack. By the way, this movie never had an official soundtrack because the director and Colonel Tom Parker hated each other. And so one of the great ways to make money on Elvis's end was to put out a soundtrack album. It was like another $1 million in their pocket.
Right.
They never put out a soundtrack album. They put out two EPs, which was a 45 RPM record with four songs on it. So there was maybe 5 or 10 years ago, they did put out all of the Viva Las Vegas sessions, which is like buying the soundtrack. But it is the fact that they did not have an album for it for so many years is crazy.
Yeah.
It might be overall his best movie soundtrack consistently all the way through.
But now it means his family can make even more money and continue to make money.
They needed the money. They always need the money. Also, one of the reasons that I laugh is that on every other Elvis movie, it says technical advisor, Colonel Tom Parker. It says that in the credits, which was just to give himself a title and a small salary on every picture. This director, George Sidney, hated the Colonel so much, didn't give it to him. This is the only Elvis movie that doesn't give the Colonel credit. Now, this was the first adult role that Anne Margaret played. She was a teenager in Pocketful of Miracles. She was a teenager in Bye Bye Birdie, which, by the way, is a movie about essentially a musical about Elvis going off to the army. So she worked with fake Elvis in Bye Bye Birdie. So they wanted to emphasize the fact that our girl's all grown up now. And I think that's one of the reasons why she was hypersexualized in the movie. And in 1964, if you were a young lad, I think you might want to see this movie two or three times, regardless of the fact that Elvis in it or not.
I have a feeling you watch this movie a lot by yourself.
I've run out of people to watch it with. Were you not a little gobsmacked by Anne Margaret when she danced and just how appealing she is?
I think gobsmacked would be a stretch.
Okay, what word would you use? Impressed?
She's a... she's a pretty girl,
yes.
But most leading ladies are.
Yeah, but I think she's a little bit next level. I have a framed picture of Anne Margaret in my home. No shock.
No surprise.
But the fact that she is literally a triple threat with the singing and the dancing and the acting and then the beauty on top of it.
Especially
at that time for an Elvis. Keep in mind, Elvis had other leading ladies like the girl who played Batman in the TV show Batman, Yvonne Craig. Very pretty, but certainly not Anne Margaret. All right. We covered some things that we liked. What problems did you have?
This
is exciting to me because you've never seen an Elvis movie before.
Yeah, I've never seen Elvis. Actually, I have no issues with Elvis. All I wanted to do in this movie was hate on Elvis. And I can't. I can't hate on Elvis. He's great. It blends the music great.
Mm-hmm.
The movie is so predictable. There's so many little plot holes where it's like you didn't even think about how to get from that. There's some great cheesy dialogue. Like,
the
Daddy,
movie
I got a tree. Or you took a helicopter here.
The movie is so slick. You are inclined to overlook the bad writing.
Right.
Because it just moves. It really, there's no down point in it. except maybe the Yellow Rose of Texas.
And I feel like every time I go get my car fixed at the shop, it's like when Elvis looked at it, where nothing's really wrong, but let's just break it anyway. Let's force it to stay here 3 days.
When you see your mechanic and he's on the creeper?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He rolls out in that creeper and just sees money signs on me.
Exactly. I've been there myself. Any other problems you have with it? I mean, there's some of the problems you say, I think, are actually kind of benefits of the movie.
No, the problems are just that it's a dated movie.
Yeah.
It's got its own misogyny and gender role issues, like her job has to be in a swimsuit.
Exactly. Exactly. And her performance at the talent show, also in a swimsuit.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Now, do you think this movie, I don't know when a movie stops being dated and starts being a time capsule. Does that make any sense?
I think it's like, one
like when
the
you
same.
Watch, we've watched, oh, really? Okay. But like when we watched, I can't say Duck Soup because that was a fantasy movie, but like Casablanca. Obviously, there's so many dated things in it.
Right.
Everybody's smoking. Everybody's drinking. No one goes to nightclubs anymore. As far as I know, we're no longer in World War II. We're in another war. But that stops being dated, and it starts being a capture of that time.
But I think it's still dated. I think time capsule and dated would be the same.
Okay. I wonder about that, because there are movies that are horribly dated. And like, for example...
Well, they got to be good to be a time capsule.
The Austin Powers movies are meant to be time capsules, and they're purposely dated. But because it's a recreation of the 1960s, it doesn't work for me. But if you look at this, and if you look at the other Vegas movie I commented on before, the original Ocean's 11, that is a time capsule.
Maybe.
Because
unless
this
you looked at Austin Powers as a dated time capsule of what comedy was like in the 90s. And you're
so you're not giving it a 1960s thing. You're making it a capsule of the 90s. Okay, valid.
Yeah,
point taken.
Yeah, when it was made.
Point taken. When you watch this and also in Ocean's 11, to see and hear a casino of that era, that's something that doesn't exist anymore.
No. And Vegas is the best part of the movie.
I agree. I think it's so much fun, and it is a really good setting. Elvis loved Las Vegas, and he was a regular there even before he started performing there. And now I've got to be very good at what I say because my mom just walked in because we're going to Costco after this. This will shock you as well.
All right. No problem. It sounds about right. Watch out for the Chick-fil-A traffic.
Keep going. Don't be a jerk. Do you have any... you've said a lot of things. Do you have any favorite things? I would imagine one of your favorite things is you were surprised that you didn't hate it.
No, my favorite thing is I didn't hate it, and I didn't hate Elvis, that I enjoyed Elvis. I thought Elvis was fun.
Okay, good, good. And there are other Elvis movies where he's fun.
I'm okay.
You got your fill.
Yeah, I don't need another.
I love the fact that you said that he's actually a good actor.
He was fine,
There are movies where he really does act, like serious roles. They still have music in them, of course. But he was a good actor, and that's what he wanted. His idol was Marlon Brando and also James Dean. That's what he wanted to do. But there was a producer in the 1940s.
Is that why he speaks so soft?
Yeah, probably.
Because those guys did?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he was mumbly. And, I mean, he didn't overdo it unless it was a comedy scene. We've actually watched two Hal Wallace pictures, I believe. Casablanca and Yankee Doodle Dandy. So that's how long Hal Wallace has been in Hollywood. But he started putting out Elvis movies, three a year, because they were cheap. And he could make the money on them to make big budget pictures. One of them was Beckett. He often said that Blue Hawaii paid for Beckett because it made so much money for him.
And you still hear directors doing movies they're not really into because it allows them to do what they're passionate about.
And it's one of the reasons, I mean, Hal Wallace made a lot of great movies, but it's one of the reasons that Elvis soured on the entire Hollywood lifestyle. He was made to turn down the male lead of Tony in West Side Story.
Good.
And as mentioned... Don't worry, I'm not going to make you watch it.
No, but I just don't think Elvis should be in any movie that it's not Elvis.
Well, here's one I want your take on.
And
I think you might have seen the most recent one, but the third version of A Star Is Born, the one with Barbara Streisand. Okay. He was supposed to play the over-the-hill rock and roller.
Maybe that would work.
And I always had a thought that might have been a really good comeback vehicle for him. However, he was very sick at the time. He was huge. He was embarrassed of the way he looked. And also, Colonel Tom Parker did not work well with Barbara Streisand. They were just a little too pushy together. So those never happened. But I think there are a lot of people that recognized him as an actor.
Yeah.
And also, I've said it before, had this come out as a 12-song soundtrack album, it would have been a massive hit. Because
I'm sure it would have.
I mean, some of his that are not as good, like Blue Hawaii was one of the number one records of 1962, whatever it was. It was one of the top-selling albums of the year, and it wasn't that great. So this one could have been. I'm also shocked RCA didn't pull more singles for radio play. I think only two from this movie. Anyhow, any other things you want to say about it? You know what? I've done my adulation. I'm sorry.
No, I am ready to give my score.
Okay, excellent. So now, after seeing this movie, Viva Las Vegas, 1964, at 1 out of 10, 10 being the best, how many rubber bands that hold a wad of cash do you give this movie?
Did we decide, can we do halves or do I have to go wholes?
You can do halves, but nothing beyond a half. I'm not going to do quarters.
All right. Then I am going to go 6.5.
An amazingly high score for
way
you.
Higher than I expected on this.
I am gobsmacked.
Now, here's the problem.
What?
The movie's fun.
It is fun.
So you can just put it on and relax, and it's fun.
Yeah, will tell you, when I was writing the synopsis, it wasn't quite as taxing as writing the synopsis to, say, Casablanca. Very surface. Yeah.
The fun increases that score, didn't want to give it a 7.
Right.
But it's better than some things I've given 6s.
Well, since we're doing halves, I'll give it a 9.5 only because the concert movies are better. But I think as far as Elvis's acting movies, there are 31 of them. This is probably the most, it's easily the most fun. It's one of the best, but it's also the best entree into seeing Elvis. And Elvis loved entrees and desserts.
What was your score for Anne Margaret,
that is an 11.
I'm going to just send you a creeper.
You send me a creeper. Hey, I already have one. It's right up here. Don't make me choose between Anne Margaret and Jennifer Love Hewitt. It would be then I truly would need my own creeper to just get out of the room. Anyway, Anne Margaret 11, the movie with a decent score. And I hold in my hand, all you Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Pixies, the movie for next week. I want to again encourage you all to watch the movie before we talk about it. I think it makes it a lot more fun. And I've changed this feature. Josh, don't be upset. It's called
This is where I get nervous.
The Hicks Next Sticks Picks. This is the movie we're going to watch next week. And once again, it's sealed in an envelope. You have no idea.
This is where I get nervous because this movie was barely in color. It was in color, so
it
counted.
Was screaming in color.
It was in color because it counted.
If it had any more color in it, you would have gotten a tan.
It was color and bright, but it was dated as if it could have been black and white. And now my concern is we're going older.
I don't know if this is black and white or not. I don't know what the movie is. The only person who knows it is Price Waterhouse, who seals it in this envelope. And, to be honest, Josh doesn't know, but I do.
Let's see
what next week's movie is.
I really am nervous every time.
My favorite part of the show.
It's like the end of class when the teacher's going to give homework, and you're praying
forget
nothing real. You're praying that it's just something stupid.
Next week on Hicks Sticks, Nick's Picks. Oh, this is going to be good, Josh.
No.
The Sweet Smell of Success.
No, I've never heard of it.
That's great.
It has Burt Lancaster
and Tony Curtis before he was crazy. Screenplay by Cliff Odets and Ernest Lehman. Amazing music by Elmer Bernstein, not Leonard. 1957, MGM Pictures, Josh, 96 minutes. Nothing to it. Run out to your store and buy the Blu-ray on Criterion like I did.
Oh, I can tell from that picture it's black and white.
It is so black and white. Most black and white movie we've ever done. And it does share this with Viva Las Vegas, is New York is definitely a character in this movie. And it appears that New York only existed at night with wet streets. It's so black and whitey and shiny and everything. And if you make it out to the record store, you can even buy the soundtrack on vinyl of The Sweet Smell of Success. Josh, don't poo-poo this. I must say to you with much emphasis, do not poo-poo it.
Do you know, Burt Lancaster is in one of my favorite movies.
Oh, I bet it's Field of Dreams.
It is. It's the reason I know that guy.
Well, he's a little bit different in this one. He plays a newspaper guy based on Walter Winchell. It's a, you know, it actually, while it might have seemed dated 20 or 30 years ago, it has a certain renewed validity because of the...
You're going to say it's not dated, it's now a time capsule.
No. It has a renewed validity because of the thought of people being inserted into the press and us being forced to know about them in this TMZ and influencer age. Of course, almost no one had a cell phone in 1957. So it's different.
Just the time travelers. Yeah.
But again, I kept it under 100 minutes.
All right. What is the title again?
The Sweet Smell of Success.
All right.
I believe you can stream it anywhere. So,
well, and if you want to watch Viva Las Vegas after listening to this, it's available on Tubi.
Is it?
Yes.
And if you want to decide whether or not to watch it, Tubi or not Tubi, that is the question. Josh, thank you for another great week.
Always.
We'll be back soon with The Sweet Smell of Success and Josh looking at Burt Lancaster before he had one foot in the grave. We hope you enjoyed it. Remember, what are the things they need to do?
HixNixSticksPix.com.
And that's all HixNixPix. Sorry.
Right. From there, you can go to our YouTube. Find us on your favorite podcast app. Send us $200, I believe, and we will watch a movie you want to watch. You can do it all and find all that info right there.
And I think for $1,000, we will not do a movie.
Oh, $2,000, and I don't have to watch this black and white movie.
And let's talk about how we're going to split that up. Okay, love you all again. Thank you to Mike O'Mara for making this possible. Thank you, Josh.
You're welcome.
Always right there for me.
I thought you bent down like you were going to press a button, so I just left it.
I was going to press a button, but I was allowing to...
Hey,
last
week with the AI guy?
I think so.
Good.
Okay, good. All right, so we'll be back. And so long, AI guy. You served us well. We loved you. We loved you, and we love you, and we will love you. And join us next time on Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. So long, everybody.
Hicks, Nicks, Sticks, Picks. A podcast about Rob's movies with Rob Spuak and Josh Sroka.
Mike O'Mara, Radio Entertainment.
We have the tech to get food delivered in 15 minutes, but we all have horror stories about buying tickets. The Game Time app gives fans the advantage. Get amazing tickets in just a few taps. Fees are included, so what you see is what you pay. And the Game Time guarantee means authentic tickets at the best price every time. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets to concerts, sports, comedy, and more with Game Time. Download the Game Time app and create an account for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply.